You're listening to Rocket Knight.
We can get to that later, but yes,
and that's what I wanted to talk about is Jacob Herman. Okay. And how you got into meeting him and Sweden and all that stuff. How did you get hooked up with him?
So a really good friend of mine, Sean Doria, from back home in New Orleans, we had done a festival together, and this was before Jed had joined the band. I was using anyone and everyone that I knew that would play live with me at the time, and we had gotten invited to headline the second stage at CPR Fest in my hometown of Gulfport, Mississippi. And CPR Fest is put on by 97.9 CPR, usually every year. Some years they skip, but basically it's every year. And he was the drummer who played with me. We had a great time, and he hits me up one day. He's like, dude, you got to meet my friend Jacob. He's coming to New Orleans. You got to meet him. You got to record a song with him. And I looked him up and realized that he had recorded one of my favorite bands that James Laskew had actually shown me recently, called Vola. That's why they named their baby Vola. But Vola is a Swedish band that is fucking amazing. Oh my God, they're so good. Head Mounted Sideways is the song that really pulled me in, and I was just hooked, from the songwriting to how unique it was, but to the sounds. And then when I started looking up Jacob, I was like, oh my God. So he recorded someone recent that I really, really like. And then I realized he had recorded In Flames, Anthrax, Machine Head. And I'm like, oh my God, you mean I might get to work with that guy? And I was like, all right, let's go. And, we ended up meeting, and we were having the worst time ever. The worst meet and greet, the worst recording session. We weren't getting anywhere. Like, I had the idea of what I was going to record on. Sean was like, oh, we got to do something heavier. And, you know, we were getting back and forth on what we should do. And basically, Jacob looked at me and he was like, all right, we're going to let those two do their thing. Because I had a photographer in there as well, kind of being a fly on the wall. But he and Sean were hanging out and talking. And he was like, we're going across the street. And I was like, all right, cool. So we go to the Friendly Bar. He buys me a thing. I think it was either vodka or it might have been a gin and tonic. He buys me a drink. He gets one. And he's like, so this is your band, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, you're the one spending money, right? And I was like, yeah. He's like, all right. And he's like, well, then fuck everybody else, you and me. And I was like, all right, I like that. I let him hear this idea, and he was like, I really like that. We're going to work on that one, because this is the session. And we went, after we had our drink, had a little game plan. We walked back across the street, went in the control room, and then we basically put our chairs right in front of, like, I'm talking, we're right there in front of each other, like face to face. And then that was the first time I really got to look in Jacob's eyes. And I was like, oh, this guy's special. Like, it was almost like I saw the universe in his eyes. Like, there was something there that I was attracted to, you know what I mean? I was like, okay, like you got something. There's something really cool here. And then we started passing my guitar back and forth, like we were school children, you know, on the playground meeting for the first time. Truly, like, I had a Batman toy, he had a Joker toy, and we're like, oh, let's make a story. And that's what it felt like. It felt like we were playing together and creating a story. And then, you know, and he'll tell you this too, he is like, man, I thought after that session I was never gonna see him again. And then I ended up calling him, and I was like, man, we got to make a record together.
And so we started doing, pre-production. We did that in Detroit, and came up with nine song ideas, and some of them were just random noises. And then we went down to New Orleans for a month and tracked all the music. And then he hits me up and he's like, "Hey, how would you like to come to Gothenburg and write vocals?" And I was like, "What? I've never been outside the US like that." So yes. And then I got to go spend a month in Gothenburg, putting melodies and lyrics and vocal ideas through the grinder, spitting them out, and then putting them back through the grinder, and then spitting them back out again. And then we did a lot of work over in Sweden, and it was really awesome, so he's become one of my absolute best friends in the entire world. And I made a lot of family over there too. Like I still talk to all my Swedish people like weekly, daily. I could make a phone call when I land in Gothenburg and about 30, 40 Swedes would show up. Like I've got my own little army now, I fell in love with the people, with the city, with everything there. Like I have never felt so at home in my entire life in a completely foreign country where I'm the odd man out and don't speak the language. But I really am grateful to him and to those people over there and to that city. I feel like I've written some of the best music of my entire life being around Jacob. So that record's gonna be special. And I'm actually getting to go back to Gothenburg. We're talking about me going back in December to mix the record, which I've never been invited to mix a record in my entire life. I've done probably three or four records so far that have come out, but I've never been asked to mix a single one of them or be in the control room or have my, like while it's happening, I've been sent, "Hey,
So you
here's."
actually will have input
Yeah.
instead of having other people just do what they want to do.
And then,
That's
"Hey, what do you want to
yeah.
change about this?" Like, no, I get to be in there while everything's happening and, "Hey, make that snare hit like more dynamic here, or bring this, guitar bend up right here to where it I've never gotten to do that before." So Jacob is really showing me a different side of this business, even though I'm God 20 years into it now, 25 years into it now, and I still am getting to experience new things. And he's
Now,
helping me do
this
that.
is your second album, right? That you
For
okay.
Riding with Killers,
And
yes.
when is this coming out?
I don't know. I don't
Okay,
want to
sorry
rush
I
things,
asked.
There's been talks of us shopping it. Jake E from Syra, and originally from the band Amaranth, really big Swedish band. He has gotten kind of like he's gotten wind of this. He actually might be on a song on the record, but he and I have had some conversations. I don't know what we're gonna do with it, but he might help me with a couple things. And if we can shop it and maybe find the right deal, I want to release this next record, the right way, because I did this first one completely independent, and I feel like, while I know that Full Circle, it's a great record. I'm very happy with the work that I did on it. And I wish I could have released it on a label, but at the same time, I feel like I had to put that record out by myself to make noise on my own and invest in myself through this record. So whenever I hopefully do find the correct label deal out, because I know it exists, because bands are still signing record deals, it's still out there. I feel like this record is to get everyone's attention and figure out, "Oh, Riding with Killers is a real thing," and then, hopefully we can release it maybe with a label down the line. It's still up in the air, but I don't just want to throw this out independently, and just hope something sticks.
See, that's the thing I've been wanting to ask a musician, labels versus independent. Labels aren't what they used to be. Like in the 1990s, they put money into people.
I think they still put money into people.
You think they still do?
Of course they do. Bands wouldn't be signing if they didn't. Bands wouldn't still be with their labels if they didn't have the right kind of backing behind them. I just think a lot of bands signed a lot of bad deals and have a bad taste in their mouth. And you can go the independent route if you have a shit ton of money, which I do not. Like I've definitely forked out a lot of money, but like, it's because I have to work my ass off painting houses with my business. I don't have a financial backer. I don't have rich parents. I don't have rich friends that are like, hey, bro, here's 100K. Here's 500K to dump into your band. Like, I have to throw the tiniest pebbles in the world, you know, at radio. Like, you know, Don't Fade Away just went to rock radio last week, and we're getting our first report Friday, which I'm really excited about. But I have the smallest shoestring budget, but luckily I found someone like Timothy Binder from New Ocean Media who really believes in me and believes in the art, but he knows that I'm not rich. He knows that I have to really work hard to come up with $1,500 or whatever it is for a 6-week awareness campaign. Like, of course I could give him more money and do whatever, but he also understands that I'm just one guy, you know, and I also can't ask, you know, Jed and Chris to, hey, man, you guys want to throw in money on music you didn't write and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like they're here with me. They're in writing with Killers, but it's really, and I guess that's for me, like a moral standpoint to where I can't morally ask them to help me with that because, you know, it's not their art. And I mean that in the most respectable sense possible, but like it would just feel weird to me asking them to dump money into something that I spent the money on and didn't, you know, because when we write a record together, yes, we're all going to be putting money into it, but like this is my way to get awareness out. But you know, it takes a lot of money to make a band truly click and compete with all the big boys out there, you know, with all the Slipknots and the Mudvayne's and, you know, the Bad Flowers and the this, that, and the other, you know. So independent's cool if you have money, but I do not.
Yeah, because I cover Dirty Honey a lot, and they are pretty big and they're unsigned, but they must have money backing them. That's the thing.
Of course they do.
It has to be, you know, and nowadays, I want to talk about something that's kind of off the topic, but on the topic, pay to play.
Yeah.
I'm seeing that a lot. I've heard from a lot of musicians either getting on to bigger tours and stuff. They're paying for it and people don't realize it though.
And I've had those same offers and I turn them down because I don't want to become known as the band that is going to buy on to everything that we do and I'll earn it by my own merit. And I'm starting to get these shows, you know, I'm starting to get added on to bigger bills with bigger artists and I'm not having to pay to be on, you know, the bill. Like, do I have to sling some tickets every now and again? Sure. But I'm fine with that because that means I get to go meet fans. I get to interact. I get a cut of the ticket sales. So I'm still not paying to play, you know, and it's showing the venue that we're worth our salt and can put asses in seats and we've got, you know, a draw within the community. But I don't ever want to become that band. Cause again, once people get wind of that, oh, they'll pay us, they'll do whatever. And that's just not who I want to be at the end of the day. I'm here to get paid, you know, because you know, like I'm good enough to get paid. I mean, hell, Taproot pay. I don't make a lot of money, but I still get paid to play my guitar. So I should get paid to sing and play, you know, and we're getting to that point, you know, we're starting like Arts Beats and Eats and other places are starting to offer us guarantees, you know, because we are bringing people with us. We are respecting the headliner, the venue. We're being cool to hang out with and we know how to conduct ourselves. So I try to stay away from that as much as humanly possible. And yeah, you know, it might take me a little bit longer to get
up the mountain, but I'd rather take the long way around because at that point I'm going to build a legacy. I'm going to build a real following and I'm going to have real accomplishments under our belt, you know, because I'm going to have to work for it. And that's all. And, you know, much like I tell with the painting business, like, dude, I don't want a handout. I want an avenue to work. And if you give me that avenue, I'm going to work my ass off and you're going to wish you paid me more. You know, of course, nobody wishes they paid more for something, but I'm just using that as an example of like, I'm going to do such a good job. Wow, maybe we should have given him more or whatever, you know, and that will eventually lead to bigger and better things.
Let me ask you something about labels because I've always wondered when you have an album, let's say it's a product, do you send it to the labels and then, I mean, do you like shop it around? I don't know because I've never done it. How
I
does it
mean,
work?
like, I would say you have to have a good manager at that point. I mean, you can essentially do stuff independently yourself if you have the right contacts and the right ability to know how to communicate and navigate your way through that, or if or really the right entertainment lawyer too. You know, you got to have a good team behind you because if you don't, you can sign a bad deal real fast. And we saw that in the early 2000s with a lot of bands that got deals that slipped under the cracks. Like they were letting everybody in, but 90% of those bands are gone because they didn't know what they were signing. It was, oh my God, record deal, let's go. And it's like, you can't do that. It takes the right team to make that happen, I would say. But you gotta have believers instead of bullshitters, you know? And that's really what it comes down to. Like if you have a team around you, they better believe in what you're doing.
Taylor, speaking of Sweden, are you a fan of Ghost?
Oh, I love Ghost. I love, 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 love Ghost. Big fan. I bought a Gibson RD. Which is the model, just because the original, I would say original, but like for a long time, they were playing the Gibson RD models. Like, I literally bought one of those guitars because of Ghost. And I've played the Hagstrom, Phantomens, all the iterations that they've had of that. Like, I've learned those songs. Like, and it's funny enough, an old guitar player of mine, his name's Jared. We always joke that we're going to randomly show up at a Ghost show and just kick the shit out of the two guitar players and steal their masks and just go on tour and replace them unbeknownst to Tobias just because we want to play guitar for Ghost. So like I would play guitar for Ghost in a heartbeat. I love that band. They're so cool. Also, no disrespect to the guitar players. Total joke. Total joke. We're not violent people.
I saw them. I photographed them. God, it must have been like 2015, 2016. I've been into them for a long
Oh, in the
time.
early,
They
that's
were
so
playing here in
cool.
Tampa, and I have been a huge Ghost fan. Another Swedish band that I'm crazy about, The Hives.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
They came to the United States, must have been a couple years ago. They hadn't been here in like a decade or something.
Did they
And
have a song called Get Free? Was that the Hives? Wait,
they're like
no.
a garage rock band
I'm
from
trying to
Sweden.
think. I know the high. I think I might be mixing up this single with another band, but if I'm not, I don't know. Don't put
Well, look
that.
them up. I know my mind goes blank because I deal with so many bands, but anyway, the Hives. Years ago, this was like in 2015, I interviewed a band out of Sweden and they purposefully dressed up like what they call, well, like rednecks. They were called Swedish Redneck Metal Band and they made guitars out of shovels and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
They had like pitchforks and they had like instruments made out of like farm utensils. It was so weird. And they had long beards. They looked like ZZ Top, but they were like, yeah, you know, they're like Facebook friends with me. But anyway, I wanted to ask you, Mississippi.
Yeah.
You know, you made it up to Detroit, and I started thinking about the blues. You know,
Yeah.
John Lee Hooker went from Mississippi to Detroit. And he wrote a
Really?
lot. He wrote Boogie Chillin'. He wrote a lot of the music in Detroit. He actually worked in the automobile factories in the 1940s. And a lot of the people from Mississippi Delta, the blues people, made it up to Chicago and Detroit. And in a
Yeah.
sense, it's kind of like your path.
And it's funny that you bring up the Delta and that kind of like it's almost a spiritual kind of a thing, but I feel like I had my own crossroads moment a couple of years back. We had played Rocklahoma, and there's a little city called Arcola in the Delta. And never been to this place until I started really traveling with the band. But the first time I ever saw it, I had the craziest deja vu, and I was like, I've dreamt about this city. I've dreamt about this place. And in the dream, it was like the 30s or something like that. And I walked in this building, and it was a music venue. And I saw a band. I had a drink, and on the way back from playing Rocklahoma, I tell my band the story. Well, the guy driving our van, sorry, that sounded way more glorious than it actually was. He pulls over, and I was like, "What are you doing?" He's like, "We're gonna go check this place out." And I'm telling you, this place looks like it's boarded up. Well, we pull on the door, we realize it's open, and about that time, this dude walks out. And he takes a look at everybody, and he's like, "Y'all can't be here. We're not open." And then he looks at me, and he stops in the middle of the sentence, and he looks at me, and he cocks his head, and he's like, "It's good to see you, brother." And he walks up to me, and he hugs me, and I was like, "Fuck was that?" And then he walks back inside. I tell him the story. He's like, "I'll be right back. Hold on." And he goes back inside, disappears back inside, and everyone in the band's jaw is on the floor, and they're like, "Dude, what the hell was that?" And I was like, "I don't know." And he's like, "Y'all can come in." He's like, "I need you to come meet these two gentlemen back here." We walk in, he's mopping the floors. It's red and white checkered flooring, and a big little hall that you would host a band in. And there's these two African American gentlemen in the back, and he's like, "Tell them what you told me." And I told him the dream, told him the story. And they're like, "Well, young man, that's exactly what this place is. And we just had an event last night, and it just so happens we have three beers left. You want to buy them?" And so I bought three beers, and me and a couple of the guys in the band had a beer in that venue. And it was just the craziest,
It's like
weirdest
reincarnation, where you
thing
reincarnated, or
in the world. I
wow.
still can't explain that to you to this day, but like
It's very
I felt
deja
like I was supposed
vu.
to be there. But you know Robert Johnson, the whole Delta Crossroads story, and then one of my favorite guitar players, BB King, from the Delta, and then now realizing that a lot of these Delta bluesmen ended up where I'm at. Like, it's like it's you can't ignore connections. Like, there's something mystical, there's something spiritual, there's something real and alive within this music, and I just always feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be, and this you making that connection even more just makes me realize it that
Look
much.
it up. There's a lot of history about the blues in Detroit. A lot of famous people would go through there and perform, old jazz people like your Billie Holidays and
Yeah.
John Lee Hooker lived downtown, I believe, and he wrote a lot of the music. And I had wondered if you had been to all the blues sites. I've always wanted to go in Mississippi. I mean, Tupelo, like
I
Elvis
played Tupelo. Oh,
born
yeah.
there, and all these different tours things. Is it worth a trip? Like, if I wanted to take a road trip to go through all these
Well,
places,
of course it is. Like,
museums and
you
stuff like that.
know, especially if like Memphis is a hard town, but if you can get to Sun Studios, sit where Johnny and Cash and Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and all these just great rock and roll and blues guys came from, like, it's absolutely worth it. And I don't know, I've just always
I've always felt something about that story that I told you in that moment in my life, you know, being up there, like it was crazy, you know. I would say yes, for sure. There's something mystical up there. And
Yeah.
like I do kind of like that I come from the same area as, you know, I mean, not the same area, but the same state as, you know,
Yeah, and
BB King and all these great blues guys.
you
Like it's
do,
very
'cause
cool. It's
first
very
thing
cool.
when I think Mississippi, I think, oh, like Deep South, but really the birth of the blues, I mean, the Mississippi Delta, all that, it's in people's soul down there. And I was kind of interested about, because I've read a lot about the blues. I like the blues. I wondered if you had been to like a lot of these places or whatever.
Oh yeah, and the one time that I stopped in the Delta, I got the craziest spiritual encounter I've ever, like, when I'm telling you, and this guy, and I must have been 25, 26 at the time. This guy was probably early 40s. We would have never met, but God, he looked at me like I was his brother, and he knew me since we were kids, and the way that
Wow.
he hugged me and embraced me, like, it still gives me chills when I tell people this story today. Like I'm feeling the hair on my
Yeah.
arm stand up right now. Like it, I still can't explain that story. I still can't explain it. And I've got my own Delta story, you know. Like I don't know if that was my crossroads or whatever it was, but because you know Robert Johnson and that whole,
Sell your
you
soul to the
know,
devil. He disappeared for a while.
he did. And I don't think I sold my soul to the devil because I'm not for sale, but you know, I definitely feel like I encountered a very cool mystical being that day. And it's just something that's always stuck with me. And I honestly maybe one day would love to go back if it's still around and film a music video there and make a Delta acoustic, you know, bluesy type song, you know.
I go back to your roots. I think that that's fascinating. And then I wanted to ask you something we were kind of talking about when I met you, the South. Why do the bands avoid playing down here, like in Florida, or they might go to Atlanta and then they'll go up to Houston? Why do they avoid the South? Do you know? I don't
I
know.
think it's, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but like, you know, like a lot of people, especially from my hometown, they get comfortable with being the hometown heroes. You know what I mean? And they're not, and this isn't speaking ill, but it's just a pattern that I've seen over the years. Like, they'll go out maybe, like you said, 5, 6 hours out of their comfort zone, but then that's it. And
Well,
that was never enough for me, you know.
what I mean is a lot of the bands, I go to Detroit to see concerts because a
Right.
lot of the bands come over from England or Europe, or they hit New York, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Chicago, maybe Madison, and nobody comes to the South. I mean,
I always
to when they
loved coming down
tour.
to Miami or played oh my God, I can't, of course. Now that we're talking about it, I'm
Fort
not going to
Lauderdale,
think of it.
I'm in Tampa, so
Fort Lauderdale is
Orlando.
really cool. No, it was
A festival? Did you play rock? What's the one in Jacksonville?
Oh, Welcome to Rockville. I've done that a
Yeah,
couple
yeah.
times. Yeah, I love playing over that way. Like, I love Florida. I love playing it all around the panhandle. I love going down through Florida. You know, like I'll play anywhere. So I feel like maybe I'm a little bit of an exception to the rule, but anytime we get to go down to Florida, I'm like, let's go. 'Cause you know, it's Florida. We get sunshine, we get to run to the
Yeah.
beach, we get to do the thing.
Especially in the winter, it seems like the northern bands would want to come down here. Well, that's
And
where the
that's
whole
my thing
band.
too. Like I always hated touring up north in the wintertime. It's like, no, let's tour down south, or let's go to West Coast where we know it's going to be warm, and then let's save the northern st which but at the same time, like, you got to give the north some love during the wintertime too, because it does suck up here. And if you get a concert from a band you love, like, you tend to hold on to that. You're like, oh my God, it sucks, but at least I get to see my favorite band in like a week or whatever it is. But I love going down to Florida, you know. I love playing down there. I've always had a good time. Anytime I've gone through, I've made records down in Florida, so I like coming down there, and
Oh,
I would
good.
love to bring Riding with Killers down there during the winter time so I can escape the cold. And I know Macy would like that as well.
Yeah, we have venues here, in between St. Petersburg and Tampa and Orlando. There's a lot of concert places. It's like we need people to come here.
Yeah. And I always tell people this, like, if you can figure out if we can figure out a pathway to walk down there, I'll come down. So I'm starting to look at getting Riding with Killers out of Michigan in terms of like where we're playing and where we're headed. So that's on the list, you know, is getting back to Florida, especially with Taproot, you know, hitting these markets with the festivals. I want to come back with my band. Maybe we'll get some spillover from those fans, and that's kind of the
Well,
goal, you know.
you're going to be heading to Louder Than Life soon, right?
Later this month,
In Kentucky? It's in, yeah.
Louisville, yep.
Yeah, that should be a lot of fun. Last year, Blue Ridge. I think you guys, Taproot was supposed to be there, but it rained and rained and it was a
It rained a
disaster.
little bit, man. Like it
What was the
was.
deal with Blue Ridge?
I think there was a lot of fucky bullshit that went along with that. And I think, and again, you know, I might get crucified for this, but I feel like they were banking on insurance to save their ass. So, because if you lose out the festival and insurance picks it up, you still keep all the money.
That's right. There's
And
lawsuits right now going
oh, I
on.
know. Trust me, I know. I keep up with it. Like, 'cause we were one of the bands that, like, you know, we didn't get to play, but we were like, you know what? We're gonna have a weird little fun hangout. So we all went bowling with our fans and did karaoke. And we had like 100 kids show up randomly that we hung out with for like 4 or 5 hours. And it was cool because like it was a shitty situation, but that was the only way that we knew how to make it work, you know, because we couldn't just randomly set up in a bowling alley, and there's not really anywhere to play in that area, you know, like you can't just go, like there was just no venues to jump into unless you go 1.5 hour, 2 hours away, and people are camping, people are bought hotels, you can't ask them to go ahead and drive another 2 hours. So it's like, well, let's try to redeem this some other way, and that's the way that we did it, you know. But that situation pissed me off big time because a lot of fans got fucked over. And I mean, dude, just to say it, man, the guy's name is Jonathan Sly. It was right in front of us the whole time. The red flag was there.
Just by
Sly.
the
And what
name,
happened? You
Sly
know, he sly dunked
Dog,
us all, man. Like, I don't know. I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I kind of wondered about that because I was reading about all the lawsuits and I thought, wait, Taproot was supposed to be there. Were you guys there? I just wondered
We were
about
about
this
to load our
rain
gear up,
business and
and we were waiting to load our gear, and then they're like, done.
Don't
I'm like,
bother.
what? All right, cool.
Wow.
And then like it was sunshiny the rest of the weekend. Like
That's pretty
it could have
suspicious.
happened. It could
Yeah,
have
that.
happened. The rest of the show could have gone on easily.
Yeah.
They could have made that work.
We're almost out of time, and I know it goes by quickly, doesn't
Oh yeah.
it? What is on the agenda for the rest of the year?
So we might have another Detroit little festival for Riding with Killers. I can't really reveal details on that just yet. But we will be at the Machine Shop November 22nd with Taproot. So I'll be doing double duty. We have a little mini Michigan run with our boys in Heartsick coming up in October. Taproot's got a couple festivals left. We're doing Louder Than Life. We've got a club date in Cadillac, Michigan. We've got Aftershock in October.
I
We've
saw
got
that. That's
San Diego.
California. Isn't it
Oh
California?
yeah,
Yeah,
I'm
wow.
ready to get back to Cali. I love California. We just did a my girl and I just did a
little personal road trip. We were out there for 11 days. It was absolutely gorgeous. We had a great time. So we're really excited to go back out there and play. So, you know, we've got a couple of good shows lined up for both bands for the rest of the year. You know, I'm looking to go back to Sweden.
Christmas time too. That'd be a nice time to go.
And I think that'll be great. You know, spend Christmas there, New Year's, mixing the record, hanging out with friends. And then just start getting ready for 2025, because I really want to get Riding with Killers.
Here is Riding with Killers.
Do you know? You're listening to Rock at Night.
The introductory song, Get On Down, is from blues artist Billy Bass Alford. Look for his music at ReverbNation.com.